Don't wait for somebody else to do it. He's not doing it. Let's together leave a faith legacy, regardless of what's happening in the political world.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be your views because our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up. So what would you like to talk about? We'll talk about what ever you'd like to discuss. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And if you want to be the first one in, just give us a call right now, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, I want to tell you, we now have the 4-CD set on the EMP attack, the electromagnetic pulse attack. And this is a subject which is not discussed in general terms. It's certainly not discussed in our general media. You don't hear much about this on a 2020 or certainly a 48 hours or Dateline. And yet this is a threat, probably the greatest threat that has ever faced our nation. And if you analyze it, it doesn't make sense. Now, the 4-CD set are 4 interviews that we did with various people who've studied what's going on, who are back in Washington, D.C., who have certainly ties to the intelligence organizations, to the Defense Department, and they understand what's going on. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that these people are frightened. I know some of them have actually made arrangements for other places to go when things get bad. And if they hope that they'll be able to get out of the Washington, D.C. area and be able to protect themselves and their families, because, of course, they understand the implications of an electromagnetic pulse attack. They understand that the Russians, the Chinese communists, North Koreans, and the Iranians and the Venezuelans and the Pakistanis and even the Indians have considered methods of launching an electromagnetic pulse attack on America. And I will tell you that I would not be at all surprised if Iran didn't do something like that. I was simply reading today that our embargo, certainly on Iran, has destroyed 50% of the value of the currency of that country. They're having very, very real problems in Iran because we're at war with Iran. You may say, well, we're not at war with Iran. Yes, we are. We gave $400 million to a terrorist organization about 4 years ago, a terrorist organization operating in Iran to go around killing people and try to overthrow the government. And certainly our attack on their economy through sanctions, this is an act of war. And of course, they have lost over 50% of the value of their currency. And you know, so there's one thing, and that is, of course, when you're having real problems in your country, what you want to do is be able to blame it on somebody else. And certainly they are going to be blaming it on America. Now, we're told there's a lot of hacking attacks, certainly onto our banks are being hacked. They're being, certainly our various industries are being hacked, and we're being told this is Iran. I don't believe that at all. I believe that is being used to justify the fact that we are going to attack Iran in the not-too-distant future. But what nobody tells you is that Iran is preparing and has already been doing tests over in the Caspian Sea, firing off missiles up into the stratosphere a couple of hundred miles in preparation for an EMP attack on America. This is not imaginary. This is really very real. But people say, well, they don't have any nuclear weapons. And I've talked to very knowledgeable people who agree with that position. But I will remember in 1993 or 1994 actually interviewing a gentleman who was the an advisor to the Republican Congress, House of Representatives, the Republicans, the House of Representatives. And he personally told me at that time that Iran had at least two atomic bombs that they'd purchased on the open market. And we'll be back here in just a moment. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8255.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's going to be open line, so give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, because our regularly scheduled guest isn't here, and we'd love to hear from you and what you'd like to talk about. But I was simply sharing with you the fact that now we've put together a fairly good kit on information on the EMP attack, the very real danger of an electromagnetic pulse attack on America. Now, what is an electromagnetic pulse? Well, there are two sources of it. One, of course, is that it can come from the sun, a solar storm. We've had them, but they had a very severe one back in 1859, and it knocked out all the telegraph communication across America. Of course, it was easy to get that repaired because, of course, they didn't have an electric grid at that time. They simply had batteries and local generators, and they were able to get the electrical system, certainly the communication system back up working in fairly short order. But that's different today. We are totally dependent upon electricity today. You're dependent upon electricity when you go down to the gas station and you want to buy gasoline. An electric pump pumps gasoline into your car. You're dependent upon it for the refrigeration. You're dependent upon, certainly, electricity for the water that comes out of your pumps. The pumps that pump water through the pipelines across our cities are all electrically controlled. And, of course, if there was an electromagnetic pulse from the sun and it was strong enough, it would simply knock out our electronic grid and all across America. In fact, indeed, it could knock it out across the world. But we are certainly the most highly developed electronic grid system. And, of course, there are all sorts of things that could be done and could have been done to protect our electronic grid. And nothing was done. And it doesn't make any sense. I mean, we're talking about a few billion dollars. $1 billion a year for 10 years, or at the most $2 billion a year for 10 years. We could have all sorts of transistors and generators and the other items that go into an electronic system, turbines. We could have had all of these things on hand. And they could have put certainly brakes into the line so that we would not be susceptible, but they have not done any of the logical things. This is the amazing thing. And basically, of course, they have known there was a danger dating back at least to the year 2000, probably even to the late 1990s. And there have actually been a number of congressional commissions. There was a congressional commission in the year 2004. They came out with a report. They had a general, four-star Army general, who testified. And he said, you know, it's not a matter of if we're going to have an EMP attack. It's a matter of when we are going to have an EMP attack. And I think you have to understand that. This is not an imaginary threat. It's a very real threat. Early this week, I interviewed Mr. Michael Maloof, author of a book, and we're carrying this book. We think it's an important book that you should get. It's entitled A Nation Forsaken. Now, who is Mr. Maloof? Well, anybody can write a book. Mr. Maloof was 30 years worked for our Department of Defense. During the latter years, he was a senior policy analyst reporting directly to the Undersecretary of Defense. When he retired, he went to work for WorldNet Daily as a reporter. And basically, of course, he is very, very concerned about the danger. Certainly, Joseph Fair of WorldNet Daily is trying to get information out there, a series of articles. But, of course, you're not hearing about this in the controlled media. And you have to ask yourself, why is the media ignoring a threat which could kill up to 90% of the American population within 6 months to 12 months? And this is not simply a casual remark. If you were to get our DVD, the talk that Ambassador Henry Cooper gave before the meeting, our annual Radio Liberty meeting that was on the 21st of October of last year, and Ambassador Cooper commented that basically it is anticipated we could lose between 60 and 90% of our population, or we could lose up to 90% of our population within 6 to 12 months of an EMP attack. But if you get that talk, it's on DVD, we'll send you a copy of the report from the Heritage Foundation, where actually two PhDs had analyzed the danger. And what was their conclusion? Why, certainly, we could lose 90% of our population within 6 to 9 or 12 months following an EMP attack. And you'll hear the same thing repeatedly from people who have analyzed this. This is the common thought. So you would think, in view of that, we would do everything possible to protect the American people. And the amazing thing is we're not doing it. And the question is, why? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're interested in pursuing this, actually we have four different items. One is Ambassador Cooper's Ambassador Cooper's talk on DVD. And if you get the DVD, of course you'll get the Heritage Commission report without additional cost. We actually have a four CD set of four people I've interviewed on the subject. We have the book entitled A Nation Forsaken by Michael Maloof, who was 30 years with the Defense Department, formerly the Senior Policy Advisor, reporting directly to the Undersecretary of Defense. And then, of course, we actually have reproduced the 2004 Congressional Commission report on the danger of an EMP attack on America. And what is so amazing to me is there seems to be so little concern about this very real threat that could destroy America. And yet, of course, why should we be surprised at this? I suppose I really shouldn't be surprised, because America is turned against God, and when a nation turns against God, why, God withdraws his support from that nation. There really are people who want to kill off 90%, not only the population of America, but 90% of the population of the world. And if you've never gone to my website, radioliberty.com, and gone to the section on the Georgia Guidestones, and look at the inscriptions on the Georgia Guidestones in Elberton, Georgia, there they call for maintaining humanity throughout the world at less than 500 million people in constant balance with nature. Maintain humanity at less than 500 million people in constant balance with nature. They're talking about killing over 90% of the population of the world. And people say that's crazy talk. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is crazy talk, but there really are people who feel that way. And I believe there is a very real possibility of an electromagnetic pulse attack coming from Iran. And if we go to war with Iran, and I do believe we're going to, which doesn't really make any sense, but we're already really actually at war with Iran. We put sanctions on them. We've set terrorist organizations in there to disrupt their country. They have a number of terrorist operations that are openly operating in Iran, killing people. And we're funding it, ladies and gentlemen. But we never talk about that sort of thing. And under the circumstances, would you be surprised that Iran might seriously consider retaliating against America? And as I said earlier, they have destroyed, or we have destroyed, 50% of the value of their currency during the last year. Imagine what would happen here in America if they destroyed 50% of the value of our currency. It would mean that you would have lost 50% of everything you've worked your entire life for that is denominated in dollars. Your money's in banks or bonds or simply in financial instruments of any sort. You would have lost 50% of what you had. That's exactly what we've done to Iran. And Iran has never been our enemy. Basically, of course, we are responsible for everything that's happened in Iran back in 1953. The CIA toppled a fellow named Mossadegh, who was democratically elected in Iran, and we replaced him with a Shah. In 1979, we overthrew the Shah, and we installed the Ayatollahs. And we installed the Ayatollahs. We didn't put them there. They didn't get there by accident. The Ayatollah Khomeini had been living in Paris for a number of years under CIA auspices. The CIA flew the Ayatollah Khomeini to Iran and installed him. And then you've heard about the hostage crisis and, oh, those terrible Iranians. Ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you things about the hostage crisis that probably nobody has ever told you, because I personally interviewed William H. Sullivan back at Columbia University in the year 1980, and he had been the American ambassador to Iran. During the first hostage crisis, you probably didn't even know there were two hostage crises, but basically, shortly after we had toppled the Shah and installed the Ayatollah Khomeini, why a group of students actually seized the American embassy in Tehran, and they held it for 3 or 4 days, and then, of course, they told the American ambassador, William H. Sullivan, we're going to release you, but if America was to allow the Shah of Iran to come to America, why, we will come back and seize the embassy and hold it indefinitely. Well, of course, when William H. Sullivan was about ready to leave, came back to America, he personally told me, he told the story to Zygmunt Brzezinski and to David Rockefeller and to the president who we reported to. And what did we do? Why, immediately we brought the Shah of Iran to the United States for treatment of a cancer. And then we brought in a physician from Canada to treat him. Why didn't we send him to Canada? Because they wanted to provoke the attack. They did. The students there retook the embassy. But the students were quite willing, of course, to release the prisoners. What you don't know is they repeatedly offered to release the prisoners. And I personally talked to Congressman George Hansen, who went over and actually talked to the students. And they said, look, give us the money, American money, the Iranian money that you're holding in your banks over there, and we'll turn the hostages loose tomorrow. Just give us the money back. That's our money, Iran's money. It's in your banks. And we wouldn't give them the money. And then, of course, I talked to Gunther Rosbacher, who flew George Bush over to meet with the students' representatives. And they got them to agree not to release the hostages until after Reagan was elected.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it, taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000. 405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. It's open lines. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But as we often say, reality is usually scoffed at, and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And well, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I was just talking about the so-called Iranian hostage crisis. And I was pointing out that I personally interviewed Ambassador William H. Sullivan, who was the American ambassador to Cuba, to Iran, and he'd actually been the American ambassador to Laos during the Vietnam War. He'd actually gone to Paris along with Kissinger to negotiate with the North Vietnamese. Then he was sent to Tehran. He was the ambassador in Tehran. And just after we had installed the Ayatollahs and everything was a little chaotic over there in Tehran, a group of students came, seized the embassy, held it for 4 days, and then they told Ambassador William H. Sullivan that if America were to bring the Shah of Iran to the United States, that they would seize the embassy again and hold the hostages indefinitely. And William H. Sullivan told me he returned to the United States. He told our leaders, including Henry Kissinger and Brzezinski, and I believe it was President, he told them all that of the threat. And what did we do? Why, we immediately brought the Shah of Iran to America so he could get treated by a Canadian doctor for the tumor that he had. I believe he had some sort of a malignancy. So obviously we intentionally precipitated the crisis. Now, then of course, the other thing, of course, you remember then, of course, we tried to rescue the hostages. And there was the attempted effort to rescue the hostages, but of course it failed because one of the helicopters went down in the desert. I mean, they're flying over the desert and they never thought to put in a sand filter. Do you believe that? Well, I'll tell you what William H. Sullivan told me about that rescue attempt, because he said, you know, when this rescue attempt took place, I didn't believe it, because that was my my embassy, and there was no place to set down a helicopter in that embassy. You would go across the street down the road there. There was a field they could have landed it, but there was no way that they could have landed a helicopter there. And he said, I would hate to think that rescue attempt for the hostages in the embassy was fraudulent. I would hate to think I'd have repeated that several times. He said, I know the man who led the attempt. He was an honorable man. And, of course, you remember that one of the helicopters crashed. And so we abandoned that plan. But Ambassador Smith Sullivan didn't believe it. He thought it was phony. And he said as much to me as I talked to him. And then, of course, they were actually quite willing to release the hostages. It would give them back the money that the United States was holding. And, of course, the United States refused to give back the money. George Hansen told me that, Congressman George Hansen. Of course, they arrested him on trumped-up charges and sent him to prison and harassed him over a period of 10 years. And he's pretty well disappeared from the whole system because he was actually tortured, an American congressman, tortured when he was in prison. And then, of course, finally I interviewed Gunther Rusbacher. And he was, of course, CIA. He was sort of a living legend. You can look him up on the internet. And he personally told me he flew the plane, a Blackbird that took George Bush over to Paris. They could get over there in about 2 hours in that plane. I mean, it went 1,500, 2,000 miles an hour, some fantastic speed. And George Bush negotiated with the Iranians not to relieve the hostages. They didn't want an October surprise. They wanted to get Ronald Reagan elected, and so they were to hold the hostages until after Ronald Reagan was elected, and then they could release them. And you may well remember the inauguration there in Washington, D.C., the day that Ronald Reagan was inaugurated as president. And it was a rainy day, and that people were there with their umbrellas. And just before President Reagan came out to be inaugurated, they went on the public address system and they announced that the Iranians had agreed to release the American hostages. the Americans, the Iranians had agreed to release the hostages, and it said that suddenly the clouds began to clear and the sun shone, and we knew we had a whole new day. The rain stopped, people put down their umbrellas, and we brought in a new president in 1981, Ronald Reagan. But that's the part of the story you never hear else. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, one thing about being as old as I am, I've had a chance to talk to a lot of people, and what we've done researching this, we can give you the first-hand certainly stories that you're never going to hear elsewhere. But we intentionally left those hostages there. The Iranians didn't want problems with us, but I think of this long-range plan for the coming war with Iran and eventually the coming war with the Muslim world. Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Longevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Longevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Back from this break. What we just got last Monday from our correspondent over in Jerusalem. But hang on, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's Open Lines. Our regular guest isn't here. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we'll talk about whatever you'd like to. Right now, we have Bruce on the line from Durand, Michigan, and he was asking certainly about the election of Netanyahu. Apparently, he lost a certain number of seats. His party lost a number of seats in their parliament, and of course, there's a lot of information put out The one reason he lost was because, of course, many people felt he was too militant towards Iran. And certainly the Israeli people are frightened to death. They don't know what's going to happen. There are only simply, 7 million Jews there, maybe another couple of 1.5 million Palestinians. But you've got really 100, 100, 50 million Sunni Arabs that would just love to move in there and kill the Jews. And basically, they want to drive the Jews out of that part of the world. And there's this traditional hatred between the Arabs and the Jews and the Jews and the Arabs. Well, basically, of course, I was simply pointing out to Bruce that nothing is as it appears to be. Netanyahu is simply doing what he's told to. He's being controlled by the American State Department, and the reason he has actually forced the settlers, the Jewish settlers out of Gaza, where many of them had lived for 40 years, and forced other settlers, Jewish settlers, out of the West Bank areas, is because he was ordered to by the people in Washington, D.C., and so he simply carries out his orders. He pretends to be independent. He's not independent at all. He does what he's told to do. But, of course, there are some new parties. There's a brand new party that's come in over there. And I think it's simply phony. I think the whole electoral process over there is as phony as the electoral process here. But, of course, the Jewish people are being manipulated. And I believe there's going to be a war. I think there's going to be a war with Iran. I don't know what the excuse will be for it, but I will tell you right now what we heard last Monday from Cheryl Hancock, who is our correspondent living in Jerusalem. And Cheryl is with us the first, the first Thursday of every month, and you can hear her here at night. She does the 9 o'clock program, which is about 7 o'clock in the morning over in Israel. But she sent me an email on Monday and basically said that the Jewish people are frightened. Basically, Assad, who is, of course, the president or dictator of Syria, call him what you will, he's probably a dictator. I don't believe they have fair and open elections there. Oh, but Assad has gotten together with his generals and said, look, if they kill me, and they may very well try to kill me, but if they kill me, I want you to launch a missile attack on Israel. And, of course, the missile attack, I mean, certainly Syria has a lot of missiles. And, of course, they have a large supply of chemical and biological warheads that they got from Saddam Hussein, who got them from us. We built the chemical and biological warheads for Saddam Hussein. He transferred them to Assad, certainly in about 1990 before the first Gulf War. But, of course, they've been in Syria all this time. And, of course, if they do launch an attack, it will be a chemical and biological attack on Israel. And the Israeli people are frightened. Everybody's getting their gas masks. In fact, Cheryl was just saying she'd gotten her gas mask. Church over here in the United States has sent her a gas mask. But the Israeli people are frightened. And that's probably one reason why, of course, Netanyahu did not get a majority. He says all the right things. I don't think he believes any of them. He is simply an agent of Washington, D.C. and the globalists. Anything else, Bruce?
Well, I don't believe Assad would launch an attack, even if he was dying on Israel. His main enemies are the Qataris.
You're absolutely right. But this is what we got from Cheryl on Monday.
That probably
actually, he's not dying. He is dead. And what they're being told, maybe it's not true, but what the Israeli people have been told is that Assad has said, if I am killed, attack Israel. If he's not killed, why, of course, that gives Israel a real incentive not to have him killed, okay?
But, you know, there could be
disinformation. I'm just giving you what I got.
I had a question about elections again.
Okay, go ahead.
I can't remember, but who was the prime minister in Israel in Clinton's first term? And I remember at the time when he had his second term, there was talk that they had full court press to have Barack elected.
When Clinton was president, from 1992 until almost the year.
Who was 92 to 96? Who was in Israel? Who was,
I believe it was Rabin, and they killed him.
Ah, okay. Yeah, then somebody after him was more conservative.
That was Sharon, and they poisoned him. He is in a coma to this day.
So then they had Barack. They tried to force Barack and Arafat to get along with each other. So right. I'm wondering if maybe they tried something like this in Israel again, trying to get a more liberal politician that Obama would get along with.
We're just getting, but remember, Obama is simply a front for the same people. Obama is not independent. He is totally controlled, just like George W. Bush was before him and Clinton was before him. Our presidents are always controlled. They have a handler. That's the way the system works. But you can't let the American people know that. They have to believe that suddenly Obama is the president, and he's either, whether it depends on whether you're conservative or liberal, he's either a hero or a villain, and he's simply a figurehead. Okay, Bruce, anything before we let you go?
I heard an expression called failed democracy this week I'd never heard before. The Qadri, that guy in Pakistan, that cleric in Pakistan who's leading all these protests, said Pakistan is corrupt, can't trust the elected officials, can't trust the judiciary. It is a failed democracy. You know, that sounds sort of like America.
Absolutely. And basically, of course, Pakistan is a very unstable country over there. Yeah. And they've got about 115 nuclear weapons. And I believe one of those days those are going to be utilized.
Well, have you been hearing that the Indians are telling their people in the north to dig fallout shelters?
Absolutely.
In the last month they've been telling them to dig more fallout shelters and have plenty of food and water available.
I would not. But basically, you have to understand, Bruce, that we're moving into a cataclysmic time in the history of the world. And I would not be at all surprised if there wasn't a nuclear war between Pakistan and India. I wouldn't be at all surprised if there wasn't a nuclear attack, or at least an EMP attack, on America in the next couple of years. Make your preparations, but the most important thing is be sure you have a personal relationship with the Lord, because that's all that's going to get any of us through what lies ahead. I'm going to have to let you go because I got a full board.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Bill, who's calling us from Tri-Cities up in Washington. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Hi, Bill. How are we doing?
Brian, yeah, I was just going to say that with this torture stuff that has been going on in the various military prisons in Afghanistan and in Iraq, that they developed this certain kind of torture that they're doing to the people, which is called no-touch torture. And Donald Rumsfeld signed off on some of this, but making people stand for long periods of time so that the individual believes that he's inflicting the torture on himself, and then putting the bags on their heads and making it so they put things over their hands. And this is called sensory deprivation. And they studied this in the universities in the Central Intelligence Agency funding various sociologists that were contracted by the military to study this. And, you know, that's a reason that I think people don't think when they think, you know, this indefinite detention, this denial of habeas corpus is part of the reason of doing this is not only to condition the American people that the rights are being taken away, but it's also because these prisoners are a source of experimentation for the military and the intelligence agencies. And this is the same stuff that the Nazis were doing. And I mean, as you probably know, our military and intelligence agencies looked into the Nazi files and learned about what they did to the people.
Well, not only that, Bill, but you must understand that at the end of the Second World War, there were we had the trials at Nuremberg, and most people think we tried those terrible Nazis. Well, we took a handful of them and had trials, but these Nazis, a lot of those Nazis, doctors who had been practicing with torture and developing techniques of torture, were brought to America under Operation Paperclip. Also, a group of doctors who were suddenly involved in, pardon me, a group of scientists were involved in building a spacecraft, and that is, of course, where Werner Braun came in. And then there was another group that was actually certainly involved in creating new diseases, and they were brought here. This was under Operation Paperclip. Most people don't understand that we brought many of the worst and most vicious Nazis to America and rewarded them well for their fine work under the Nazis. Furthermore, somewhere between 10,000 and 50,000 of the Nazi war criminals were helped to escape to South America, And this certainly included many of the Martin Bormann, people like that, and certainly, but Adolf Hitler was there as well. Everybody in the world knows that Adolf Hitler did not die in a bunker, except the American people. There's a book we carry, it's called The Gray Wolf. And I actually interviewed the author who actually had gone to South America and talked to the people who had known and taken care of Adolf Hitler up until the time he died in 1962. And yet you tell that to the average American, now one American in a thousand understands that Hitler didn't die in the bunker there. That's what they told the American people. Most people have no idea that American banks and American corporations funded the Nazis. Certainly you get a lot of this information, and certainly in Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, but the best source of this information is certainly John Loftus's books, The Secret War Against the Jews, and then his latest book, America's Nazi Secret, and then, of course, Dennis Cuddy in his book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan, will give you all of this information. You're never going to get through the regular channels because we can't let the American people know that we funded the Nazis, General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, IBM, AT&T, the Exxon. They were all over. There were 100 American corporations that were over there funding the Nazis. In fact, it really, it sounds so hard to believe, but when I went through Colonel House's papers back at Yale University in 1980, I came across a letter that had been sent to Colonel House by the American ambassador to Germany in 1936. And basically, he was asking Colonel House, why are 100 American corporations over here building the weapons of war for the Nazis? Nobody over here wants a war. Why are 100 American corporations? Now, that's the only place I'd actually ever seen that up until, of course, I read John Loftus's book, and he had a security clearance three levels above top secret. He went through all the secret files. Most people had never seen. His job was working for the Justice Department to track down the Nazi sympathizers who had killed 2 million Jews in Belarus. And, of course, his job was to find them. Eventually, he did find them. Where were they? They were in New Jersey. Another branch of the Justice Department was keeping them, financing them, and getting make sure they had jobs. We financed the Nazis all during the war so we could have a war, just as we're financing the Muslim terrorists and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban over in the Middle East today, so we can have a war. And the average individual has no idea what's going on. Does that answer your question at all?
I have no doubt that Nazis were taken to South America. The dictatorships down there, such as Augusto Pinochet, I mean, he murdered, tortured like 5,000 people, and a lot of them, like Juan Perón and Augusto Pinochet, you know, they're admirers of Hitler. Well, people can connect the dots, I guess, that's probably why.
Well, I think basically we have a great four tape set. It's called Operation Paperclip. And we carry Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And then, of course, we have the books by John Loftus, The Secret War Against the Jews. But if you're only going to get one, get the second book, America's Nazi Secret, and Professor Cuddy's excellent book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan. This is what they don't want the American people to know. I mean, after all, if they understood this, why, of course, I think they'd be very concerned. Hey, we're going to have to run because we've got another caller.
What would happen if everybody knew?
Well, I don't know. I hope that we'd be concerned and infuriated, but I'm not sure today if there's enough character in the American people, other than they're even capable of responding when they realize, of course, that we are funding this whole world movement. And are we funding our enemies and preparing for another terrible, terrible war where hundreds of millions of people are going to die? And yet, of course, the attitude is, well, but what about the Super Bowl? Talk to you later.
They don't know that the United States funds Al-Qaeda in Syria either.
Okay, God bless. Talk to you later. Okay, let's go to John from upstate New York. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And hi, John. How are we doing?
Hi, Dr. Ken. I believe that yesterday or the day before, we had a very good example of the continuing collapse of Western civilization by the announcement by our defense secretary and I believe it was the Joint Chief of Staff Chairman, that women should have an equal opportunity to become warriors here in the good old USA. And I thought to myself, well, that is a pretty darn despicable thing for men to do to women, especially women here in the United States. And it occurs to me, though, if anybody ever thought that women should or wanted to be in combat, they should look closely at the retreat from the Chosin Reservoir in the Korean War. And even a man probably wouldn't want to sign up for something like that.
Well, I think you have to understand, I'm sure there would be some women who'd be capable of it, but it'll demoralize the society, it'll demoralize our military, and that's really what it's anticipated, because after all, if a woman can be a soldier in combat, they can be a commander in combat. Would you really want to go into a life and death battle where certainly half the people in your unit would be killed and you'd have a woman in charge? What happens if it's the time, you know, the month when she has her menstrual period and she's not thinking quite clearly? I mean, basically, women are different than men. Women are wonderful. God made them, and so they are very, very capable. We couldn't get by without them. But I am concerned that this is intentionally being done to demoralize our military. And I will tell you that in the past, our military has won some amazing battles. But I fear what's going to happen the next time America goes to war. We brought the homosexuals in, and that is demoralizing our military. Now we're going to bring women in, and that's going to demoralize our military. But the most frightening thing is that they've done, now no Christian chaplain is allowed to pray in the name of Jesus Christ. And God, Jesus Christ, has been with our soldiers in the past. Now no military leader is allowed to lead his troops in prayer. And I will tell you that when a nation turns against God, God turns against that nation. Go ahead, John. What else would you like to say?
Well, I don't believe that it's any mistake. It's not an error on their part. I agree with you 100% that they need to demoralize the situation. But again, it's just another good example of the collapse of our civilization. God bless you, Dr. Stan.
God bless you. Thanks for calling, John. And get those people up in upstate New York listening, will you? Good night. God bless. Okay, we'll be back here in a moment to wrap up today's program. And then we've got a great program for the next hour. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
You already know that calcium is important. But did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050. JigsawMagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. JudicialReformNow.com. JudicialReformNow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes prostate support and recommends it. And thousands of men take prostate support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try prostate support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for prostate support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
And back here, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America, indeed out across the world, we are primarily listener-supported. And if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or donate to us or purchase the various items we offer, why, please help us, because we need to maintain the network of over 50 stations that we have today, where at least somewhere in America, why people are hearing the truth every day. Now, basically, of course, talking about the issues we had tonight, we'd like to suggest if you want to understand how we helped the Nazis after the war, you need to get our four tape set on. It's called Operation Paperclip, Operation Paperclip. And certainly, if you want to understand how we financed the Nazis during the war, the books would be The Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus, The Secret War Against the Jews. A better book would be, and more up-to-date, would be America's Nazi Secret, America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus. We have a four-CD set. It's called The War Against the Jews. It's my four interviews with John Loftus, The War Against the Jews. And then Dr. Dennis Cuddy's excellent book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a copy of that, a newsletter from Ambassador Dodd to Colonel House in 1936 asking why 100 American corporations were over there actually building the weapons for the Nazis in 1936. That was just 3 years after Adolf Hitler had come to power, but people don't understand we brought him to power. Why? Because he was deeply involved in the occult, and the leaders of America were deeply involved in the occult, and they wanted a war because that was going to bring about the world government. It was going to bring about the United Nations, and that's what it was all about, and they killed 60 million people. But after all, they fight wars so they can bring about world peace. That's the excuse. When you want to get Operation Paperclip, that's the four tape set. You certainly want to get the War Against the Jews. That's a four CD set. You get the books we talked about, certainly The Power Elite, The Secret Nazi Plan, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, America's Nazi Secret. They're all there. We have so many books you need to get. Now, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to get it. And we hope that many of you out there will be in a position to buy a case of the books. This will help us to get it reprinted, and you'll get 64 books at less than $2.40 for each book. And you can give them away, but you can influence people's lives. And of course, they read the book, it will change their outlook. This will be the last time. I certainly will be making this offer once this is completed. I doubt that I'll do another printing of the book, but we already have between 50 and 100,000 copies out there across America. We'd like to get out another 10,000. That's what this printing will be. So if you'd like to become part of it, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And if you're not in a position to either join the Radio Liberty family or to get a case of books, which we ask you to, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Because basically, most people find it difficult to believe that there really are satanic organizations in the world today. Many of them, of course, tie into something called the Lucius Trust. The Lucius Trust, you can go up on the website and look up their website. And basically, of course, they were originally the Lucifer Publishing House. the Lucifer Publishing House, and basically some of the most powerful people in the world today belong to that organization. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We will take you into the background of the Lucius Trust and of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Theosophists and the Rosicrucians and the Masons and all of these covert cult organizations, moving us towards a one-world government, a one-world financial system, a one-world religion, because that's why they want to destroy Christianity. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. They were there for almost 200 years. And suddenly they found that there was a wall of separation between church and state. We ask you to pray for America, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision, and our protection.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be views of William Grigg. Now, we had William on just yesterday on the 8 o'clock in the evening program talking about our court system. I don't know what he's going to be talking about this evening, but I always look forward to having William with us. He's certainly one of the most articulate, the spokesman on our side. He was formerly the editor of the New American Magazine. He was formerly the editor of the Republic Magazine. He certainly writes prolifically. His articles are frequently found on Lou Rockwell, or certainly you go to his website and pull them down. But William, of course, certainly tries to get out the same message we do, and that is the fact that we're involved in a spiritual battle. And until you understand that there are powerful spiritual forces aligned against freedom, powerful spiritual forces that want to establish a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and want to destroy Christianity, because that's the common denominator behind everything going on today. That's why today, why of course it is illegal for a military chaplain, a Christian chaplain, to pray in the name of Jesus Christ. That is why certainly a military commander today cannot lead his troops in prayer. That is why the United States military installed new constitutions in both Afghanistan and Pakistan under Sharia law, which of course has driven the Christians, all of the Christians, out of Afghanistan. And certainly they're probably less than 1% of the population in Iraq are still Christians. Of course, that's why we've installed Mr. Morsi over there in Egypt, when he has installed Sharia law there, and of course it's driven the Christians out. A lot of the Christians that fled from Afghanistan and from Iraq and from Egypt into Syria, and now of course we're over there toppling the Syrian government. Who do you think is financing? Who do you think finances this revolution over there. This is not a revolution. The fighters are not Syrians, at least very few of them are. Most of them come from Libya, they come from Tunisia, they come from Egypt, or they come from Saudi Arabia. And we're funding them, we're arming them, we're training them. But they're never going to tell the American people that we are behind this whole effort to destroy Syria, to have put in a new government there. Instead of a secular government, there will be one under Sharia law. And we're uniting the entire part of the world under the control of the radical Muslim movement, which we've funded since its inception. And if you've never read the book, The Devil's Game, we carry it. And basically it goes into how the Muslim Brotherhood was originally organized in 1928 by the British intelligence, MI6, and taken over following World War II, when the CIA was established and funded by the CIA, the Muslim Brotherhood. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the best enemy our money can buy. With that as a background, William, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you.
What are we going to be talking about tonight?
We have to talk about this continued onslaught, this escalating onslaught against the right to armed self-defense, and also some really ominous things that are happening with respect to the military. And these two developments, of course, are related. The most recent attack on the Second Amendment, of course, was unveiled yesterday by Dianne Feinstein, and it's as bad as anybody expected it to be. She's seeking to make criminals out of people who own more than 150 different types of firearms, and then exempt government officials from the so-called assault weapons ban.
Well, of course, you remember this is the same Dianne Feinstein that carried a concealed weapon when she was the mayor of San Francisco because she wanted to be able to protect herself. She just doesn't want us to be able to protect ourselves or our children, our families. William, you go right ahead.
You're exactly right, Dr. Stan. When she was mayor of San Francisco back in, I believe it was the 1970s, Dianne Feinstein had a concealed carry permit. She's admitted as much. And then in 1994, if memory serves, after the last time an assault weapon, so-called assault weapons ban was enacted, she didn't get everything she was looking for, and she admitted on camera that if she had her way, we would have had a situation in which she would have required the registration and surrender, the confiscation of all so-called assault weapons on the part of the entire private population of the country. She literally used the expression, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them in. That's what she aspired to. So you've got somebody here who, with this most recent proposal, is talking about the thoroughgoing disarmament of the American public while exempting government officials, which would be elected officials, appointed officials, administrative officials, bureaucrats, anybody who's on the public payroll in a position of public trust, as well as the military and law enforcement and retired law enforcement, they would be exempt from all the provisions of the so-called assault weapons ban, while people who have weapons that are proscribed would have them grandfathered in, but they would have to be registered. And the objective, ultimately, is to bring about the post-mortem confiscation of these firearms. These weapons would be registered and they would not be transmissible. You could not bequeath your so-called assault weapons to your children, your heirs, or a friend. You would have to deed them over to the government. So the assumption here is that they no longer own these arms, that they are merely given a conditional and temporary lease, and that lease would expire as soon as the bearer of this particular kind of permission expires. When he physically expires, then the guns revert to the possession of the government. And so really the implicit message here is that the government does have a legitimate monopoly on the use of force. The government by default owns in principle all the firearms, and it will condescend to allow us to have certain kinds of firearms for a limited time while granting this plenary exemption to everybody who's on the public payroll as a politician, bureaucrat, or as an agent of government coercion. And that really is a totalitarian premise. The mindset that was expressed by Gerald Nadler last December, we've talked about it before, I think it's worth reviewing. Gerald Nadler is a thoroughly reprehensible figure from New York who misrepresents the district in that state. And he said during a December press conference following the Sandy Hook atrocity that we should have not only a firearms and the so-called assault weapons firearms ban, is applied to this.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Sidney Whittam is simply talking about this effort to take away the weapons from the American people. Now, one of the things that has been suggested is, well, of course, if you already have the weapons, why you can keep them, they just have to be registered with the government. And then when you die, why you cannot, of course, give them to your children or somebody else. When you die, of course, they'll have to be turned in. Ladies and gentlemen, registration of weapons is a prelude to confiscation of weapons. Basically, government officials lie. And I was just thinking of this today. I was having lunch at the hospital with a group of other doctors, retired doctors, and I was just saying, you know, when Medicare first came in, why, you know, many of the doctors objected to it. And the government officials said, well, look, there's nothing to worry about. This is financially stable. There's no problem with Medicare. Why, we've got this all worked out. You can trust us. We will pay you your usual and customary fee, and things will be just like they were before. And the hospitals, they'll get their usual and customary fee, and things will be just like they were before. And a lot of doctors were very, very suspicious of what was going on, held back. But as they noticed, the government did just what they said they would do. They provided the usual and customary fee, and they didn't interfere with how the doctors certainly practiced medicine, what they did for their patients. They didn't interfere with what went on in the hospital. They didn't make any requirements for extensive paperwork. And really, it was almost too good to be true. And pretty soon, all the doctors were on board. All the hospitals were on board. Well, there was just one thing that nobody asked, and that was, you know, but how long are you going to do what you're doing? How long are you going to give usual and customary fees? How long will you not interfere with patient care? How soon will you require all sorts of paperwork in the hospital so that, well, you have probably more chance of winning the lottery than getting a back rub in a hospital today? Everybody used to get excellent care in the hospitals today. Today, many times if you come in after hours, you're lucky even to get a sandwich to eat, even though you're starving to death or a diabetic. Basically, the quality of care in our hospitals is going down. The doctors are leaving the practice of medicine. But you see, they never tell you how long they're going to do it. And all they want you to do is just register your weapons. But then what happens when they change their mind and they want to collect the weapons? And this is what they did in Armenia, and this is what they did certainly so the Turks could kill them. This is what they did certainly in Rwanda before they killed 800,000 Christians in 1994. This is what the Germans did. This is what the communists did. And this is what they did in communist China. This is what they did in Guatemala before they slaughtered the Indians there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. Basically, there are people who want a dictatorship in America, and do not think for one minute that Dianne Feinstein is really concerned about children or preventing injury. Basically, if there had been one adult at the Sandy Hook school with a concealed weapon, most of those children would be alive today. If there had been one person with a concealed weapon at Virginia Tech, why, this madman would not have been able to kill 34 students. There had been one person with a concealed weapon at Columbine. Certainly, Eric Harris and his friend could not have slaughtered so many people at the Columbine School. Ladies and gentlemen, the elite know this. They just do not want this sort of thing mentioned. They have blood on their hands, and we should accuse them. Who was responsible? It was the liberals who made those areas gun-free so there could be no protection for our children. If we want to protect our children, we have to have an armed populace. If we want to protect our families and our wives, we need to have weapons to protect them with, because increasingly they've destroyed the moral fabric of our society, and we're going to have to be able to protect ourselves and our neighbors. Go right ahead.
One of the things that we need to point out and we need to reiterate at every opportunity is that this is not being driven by a desire to address the problem. They're avoiding everything that would be a legitimate solution. They're chastely eschewing things that would actually work. And, of course, providing the benefit of armed and capable people, private citizens preferably, in school environments, is the one thing that would actually provide an on-the-spot response that would be timely and effective when you're dealing with a madman. Good heavens, across the country, including here in Payette over the last couple of days, government schools have been carrying out lockdown drills. And the logic of the lockdown drill in a government school is to cattle pen the students in kill zones. They're told to shut off the lights and hide in their rooms and then try to cover the windows rather than getting out of the kill area. The very least you can do when you're talking about an imminent threat to life and limb is to leave the area where that threat exists. You don't have fire drills to tell kids to get under the desk and turn off the lights and cover the windows. A fire drill, of course, consists of people getting out of the burning building or the building that would be burning in such an emergency. But every school lockdown drill is designed to teach children to submit, to cower, and to make themselves basically a helpless target for the rampaging madman until the police show up after the madman has killed himself to draw the chalk outlines and string up the crime scene tape. That's what happens in every engagement of the sort. There was a SWAT drill in a suburb of Boston, I believe, in Massachusetts a couple of days ago. And you had the typical scenario where a so-called active shooter was prowling the hallways. And the SWAT team showed up and went through a pantomime of actually taking him out. That's something that, to the best of my knowledge, has never happened in any of these school shootings. In Columbine, SWAT took a just disgusting amount of time performing maneuvers that were intended to amplify officer safety while the gunmen finished the engagement on their own terms. And the armed security guard at Columbine High actually fled. There have been several occasions, not just in schools, where you've had active shooter scenarios where the security guard has been at best a traffic cop simply telling people where to go. In, I believe it was Connecticut in 1998 at the lottery office where a fellow by the name of Beck blew a fuse and shot several people. The security guard at this government office, the government lottery office in Connecticut, simply directed people into the woods. He couldn't help them. And that was actually better than what you would expect at a school, because in the lockdown drill of the school, the security guards would be telling kids to stay put. It just makes no sense at all that they're actually trying to devise scenarios and remedies that would actually work. And that has everything to do with the discussion here about the opportunism, the crass, despicable opportunism of Dianne Feinstein and other people who crave the disarmament of the public in talking about a thoroughgoing ban on weapons of the sort that were not involved in Sandy Hook and have very rarely been involved in shootings of this kind. Joe Biden this morning, or yesterday, I can't remember which, had a public meeting where he was trying to console people with the idea that a shotgun's a better choice than an AR-10 or AR-15 if you're talking about an emergency that would involve looting and other violence. And the point is, he's really not in a position to tell people what they should use. Yes, shotgun's a perfectly effective self-defense weapon, but there are situations where a rifle of the sort that Mr. Biden wants to prescribe would be a better choice. The point is, under the rights protected and guaranteed by the Second Amendment, that's our choice, not his. And they are specifically forbidden by the Second Amendment to infringe upon our plenary, open-ended, and unqualified right to choose the weapons that are best suited for our self-defense needs, because our self-defense is our business and not theirs.
Well, you know, the thing that really irritates me, I heard the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, take the oath where he swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States and defend it against all enemies and domestic, and he is a domestic enemy of our Constitution. He has sworn to uphold the Constitution, but he doesn't believe in the Second Amendment. He wants to take away our Second Amendment rights. He is certainly doing all sorts of things that are unconstitutional, and he knows this. Why doesn't anybody call him on it? How can you possibly swear an oath to uphold the Constitution and then suggest that we change it? If you want to change it, why you amend the Constitution? You do not do it by judicial or certainly by presidential edict. Nobody wants to call Barack Hussein Obama a hypocrite except the NRA. They had the courage to do it. And for the first time in years, I was cheering the NRA when they pointed out that he wanted, of course, to have no protection for our children in schools. But, of course, he sent his daughters to a school that had 11 armed people in them, 11 armed. Why don't they just have one armed person there? Why do they have to have 11? Oh, but of course, he wants his children protected. But he wants to put your children in a shooting gallery. What we need is, of course, in every school, someone there carrying concealed weapons who can defend the children. But Barack Obama wants his children defended, but not yours, and he is a hypocrite.
And that's of a piece with what Dianne Feinstein is trying to do with this assault weapons ban proposal, is create a feudalist arrangement where people who are part of the privileged elite would have access to firearms. The rest of us would either be deprived of them summarily or forced to register them, which is a way station toward confiscation. You know, what's really interesting about Feinstein's proposal is how perfectly it matches up with the French colonial laws that were inflicted on Cambodia back in the 1940s and 1950s that were inherited by the Khmer Rouge in the late 1970s. When the Khmer Rouge came to power, they had registries that listed firearms ownership on the part of public officials who were targeted for annihilation by the new government. And those private citizens who were permitted to own firearms, not everybody was permitted to own firearms, and the peasantry was not permitted to own most firearms. They were permitted to own hunting weapons, the same way that, of course, Dianne Feinstein went out of her way to say that they were specifically going to exempt a certain number of hunting weapons. It's the same mentality. It's the same framework. It's the same premise. It's the same template that they're following.
I think it's the same diabolical hatred of humanity so that they would be defenseless and unable to defend themselves. What would happen, certainly, if we ever have a breakdown of the structure of our society? We would be invaded by another country. America's never been invaded. The reason it hasn't been invaded is because we had an armed population. And during the Second World War, both the Germans and the Japanese had talked about invading America and knew it would be futile. Why? Not because of the oceans, but because we had so many people who were armed here, they knew they couldn't take the country. But believe me, Dianne Feinstein wants to take away our weapons, and Barack Hussein Obama and Biden and all of these people want to take away our weapons. And if there was an invasion, who would defend America? Not Dianne Feinstein, you can be sure. We'll be back in just a moment with William Greene here at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead, William.
The thing that we should most be worried about, of course, is not merely the prospect of an invasion from abroad, and the government that rules us is doing its level best to try to engender the kind of hatred that eventually could lead to an invasion in the United States. They're doing nothing that would be materially beneficial for the defense of our country and doing everything within their considerable power to provoke and catalyze enmity toward the United States, including arming the worst elements of the Muslim Brotherhood in several countries overseas. They're always, of course, trying to find and fortify the most convenient enemies that they can approach overseas for that purpose. They're in the business of creating enemies and creating conflict. It's really a perverse foreign policy that we have, where they multiply enemies and they alienate allies. They create nothing but rancor and hostility toward the United States. That's exactly the opposite of the prescription that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson gave, where they talked about staying out of the affairs of other countries and trying to conduct our business on the basis of mutually beneficial commerce. But the long and short of that reflection here is that if we end up in a situation where we're actually faced with the prospect of invasion, it's going to reflect the untiring, diligent efforts of the people that presume to rule us to create that type of a scenario. But beyond that, that distant but not altogether implausible scenario, the thing that should concern us most, apart from, of course, the random chaotic violence that we will encounter as the economy continues to implode and moral discipline is relaxed, is the enmity and the malicious intent of the government that is disarming us. And the fact that Feinstein's bill tracks so perfectly with the priorities of the pre-communist colonial government in Cambodia, and, of course, the same type of colonial gun registration policies existed in Haiti and existed in Congo and Rwanda and a number of other countries where you've had civilian disarmament programs using these registration lists that have been compiled. The fact that she's pursuing that so diligently tells you everything you need to know about the maliciousness of her intention. She's not trying to disarm criminals. She's trying to disarm citizens and using, of course, the specter of crime and occasional eruptions of large-scale violence as a justification for this. I've shared this before, but I think it's worth reviewing. I have a friend in the Special Forces who was deployed to Haiti in 1994, I believe it was 1994, to re-enthrone Aristide, who was a deranged communist psychopath, as the ruler of Haiti, had been thrown out by Raoul Cedrus and the military junta, and the UN Security Council ordered that Haiti resubmit itself anew to this deranged man by the name of Aristide. So the U.S. military was sent to invade Haiti for the purpose of re-enthroning Aristide. My friend of the Special Forces was given printouts from the local police headquarters, the local police office, that were derived from the National Firearms Registry. In Haiti, you could own any weapon that you had the money to buy. All that was necessary was a willing seller, a willing buyer, the appropriate currency to conduct the transaction, and the registration of whatever it happened to be that you purchased. You could own fully automatic weapons. You could own landmines and hand grenades, but they all had to be registered. Why did they have to be registered? So that in the event the government wanted to disarm, you would be able to find the weapons to do so. In this instance, you had a foreign military, the United States military, acting under the orders of the United Nations Security Council, taking gun registration lists that have been compiled and made available.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sidney Whittem was simply talking about one of his friends who had been with the Special Forces, who was sent to Haiti back in the 1990s to install a communist lunatic named Aristide. It had been thrown out by the people. There'd been a revolution there that got rid of Aristide, but we wanted to reinstall this crazy communist, and so a Special Forces team was sent in, and of course this friend of Whittem's was part of that Special Force team, and they were given a list of everybody who had a weapon, any sort of weapon they had there. The guns were simply registered, and once they were registered, then the Americans could go around and collect them and totally disarm the population so they'd be totally helpless. Go right ahead, Whittem.
That's what the intent was, but there were a number of people, my friend among them, who didn't carry out the strict letter of the orders that had been given. In his case, he would knock on a given domicile. He'd identify himself. He'd ask to speak with somebody whose name was listed on the registry. And having identified that that person lived at a given house, he would ask about the firearms that were listed on the registry that were registered for that home. And having confirmed that those firearms were there, generally speaking, my friend would nod politely and say, "Thank you, I'm just checking. Have a nice day." So he did not carry out his orders, because he considered them to be immoral and unjust, and because he recognized that what was happening in Haiti was really a dry run, a trial exercise, a scrimmage, if you will, for the same kind of program that would eventually be carried out here in the United States, that the people that sent him there had their way. That was almost 20 years ago, and I contend that their objectives have not really changed that much. On a couple of occasions, he altered that routine as he found out people who seemed to him to be solid and sober, upstanding people of properly anti-communist inclinations. After he confirmed that they were the owners of the given firearms listed on the registry, he would say, "Well, would you be interested in getting something better?" And so there were a couple of times we actually upgraded the weaponry of people he considered to be outstanding and morally sound people for the purpose of defending a given neighborhood, a block, part of a given village, against the onslaught by the communist-dominated government of Aristide. He understood that unless they had the means to fight back, some horrible things would happen. And I happen to think that the fact that he organized a certain number of people in a resistance cell in Port-au-Prince and a couple of other places, I think that there was sufficient pushback from this small but well-armed, well-trained group to prevent some really horrible things from happening, because if you remember the early 19th century, there was a bloody revolution in Haiti, and it was a revolution that threw out a terrible government, but it was one that precipitated a great deal of violence, and it was because of that revolution in Haiti against the French, the Bonapartist French colonial administration, that Napoleon had to sell the Louisiana Territory to the United States. He decided to wash his hands of the whole deal. Things had gotten to be that violent, that difficult to manage in Haiti at a time when most of the weaponry consisted of edged implements rather than firearms, although there were some primitive firearms used in that case. But if there hadn't been, in my opinion, an armed population in Haiti that had been given a certain amount of training and direction by people who were renegades within the military, they were renegades against unlawful orders that were cut by the United Nations Security Council, I hasten to specify. If this had not been present, in the equation in Haiti, I think really horrible things would have taken place, because the Tourbus Divinus, the divine mobs, I can't remember what the Creole expression of the cognate for the Spanish would be in Haiti, they were people who were prepared to carry out massacres. They had been studying what communist thugs had been doing in South Africa. One of the things they talked about was importing the charming custom called necklacing, in which a tire soaked in gasoline would be draped around the neck of somebody who had either been bound by wire and had his or her hands cut off, and then set afire to die in one of the most horrible ways that one can imagine, where this gasoline-soaked tire would ignite, and then the rubber would burn into the skin of the victim. And this is something that had actually been boasted about by Aristide. He referred to, I believe, as Père Lebrun, and Lebrun was the name of a tire factory. Père, of course, if I remember, Frère Lebrun. Frère means brother. Brother burning tire is what he was referring to. He'd said this in speeches before the UN dispatched the United States military to Haiti, where they were going to use gun registration lists to disarm people who had been left helpless in the face of that maniac and his followers. That's what the United States military is involved in, with the exception of a handful of people who, out of principle, rebelled against their unlawful orders. I don't know if we have the same military today that existed even in 1994 in that respect.
Well, I will tell you that apparently the military in America is being questioned now. The officers being questioned as whether they're willing to actually fire on American citizens. And if the officer says he's not willing to, then he's relieved of his command. This is happening today in America. Why would they be doing that? I think they're planning on firing on the American people. They know they're not going to want to give up their freedom and their weapons, and they're making preparations to disarm the public.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair, as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
William, you go right ahead.
I agree with you, Dr. Stan, that there have been really ominous institutional and ideological changes in the military, and this is to be expected because the military, being a top-down authoritarian body of necessity, is an irresistible target for social engineers. And they've always approached the military from the perspective of conducting the proverbial long march through the institutions and reconstituting it from within. You have the old story of the revolution within the form. The form remains the same, but the ideological content has been made different. And this is very easy to do when you've got a modern administrative military that's organized bureaucratically and that is, most importantly, a standing, self-perpetuating body. That's one of the reasons, I suspect, why the Founding Fathers did not want us to have a standing army, a standing navy, certainly to protect the coasts and to guarantee freedom of the seas in order to conduct commerce. But a standing army was seen as problematic for two reasons, the first of which, of course, that it can become the arm of an imperial and lawless government. That's something they had personal experience with under the Ministry for the Americas under King George. Secondly, I suspect, although they weren't familiar with modern social engineering, they certainly knew the way that a military could become the vessel of a revolutionary despot to reconfigure society from within. You can actually read in the notes of the convention compiled by Madison where there are references to people like Cromwell and Catiline and other revolutionaries who had created new model militaries, new model armies, and deployed them against their people as an ideological weapon. And so while they didn't necessarily foresee the modern Gramscian social Marxist revolution that has taken root in our country, they understood that there was something dangerous and potentially revolutionary about having a standing army. And now just a couple of days ago, after we hear from Jim Garrow about this officer who was telling him concerning the litmus test about being willing to fire on Americans being the the shibboleth sibboleth test for people who would be suitable for promotion within the command ranks of the military. A couple of days later, we have Leon Panetta talk about fully integrating women into combat. And this is done not because it's military.
Hold that thought. We will be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about this whole concept. Now they are actually questioning people in the military as to whether they would be willing to fire on American civilians. Why would they ask that question? That should have every American up in arms. Well, of course, obviously, they're planning on firing on American citizens, and at least within the officer corps, if you certainly are against certainly firing on American citizens, that may very well and probably will end your military career. And then, of course, certainly we see other things happening just within the last couple of days. Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, who incidentally I know, I ran against him for Congress. He is an unscrupulous and evil man. I know him very, very well. But Leon Panetta has now come up in favor of women in combat in the military. Now, certainly I think the women can do a good job in the military. I do not think women should be in combat. Why? Because, of course, they can be promoted to command positions. Would you really want to be going into a life and death situation with a woman in command? I don't think so. I think that this is designed to demoralize the American military. Not that women aren't capable of killing like anybody else, but it will affect their souls. And certainly, it's terrible on men. It'll be even worse upon women psychologically down the line. And ladies and gentlemen, this is an obvious intent to demoralize the American military. We're demoralizing the American military by not allowing chaplains to pray in the name of Jesus Christ, not allowing our military officers to lead in prayer with their troops, certainly putting gays into command positions in the military. Would you really want to have your superior officer, a man that you knew to be gay, and engaged in the activities that gays are engaged in? Because there's psychological problems with many gays, and many of them are wonderful people, but they do have psychological problems. And in the military, you don't have a place for psychological problems. The military is different than civilian life. And by putting women into combat and gays into command positions, we're laying our military open for defeat. And, of course, all of this isn't defiance of God's law. And when a nation and a military turns against a God, you can be sure that God will turn against that nation and that military. Go right ahead, William.
And, of course, this has nothing to do with military necessity. You wouldn't say that this would enhance the fighting ability of the United States military to integrate females into the combat ranks. Back in 1994, there were preliminary measures. And, of course, we're talking about people who progress incrementally. They will push as far as they can until they meet resistance, and then they will gather their forces and soften up the target through this familiar dialectical legerdemain that redefines people's expectations. And once they have been mentally reprogrammed to accept the next increment, that increment will be integrated into the formula. That increment will be taken, and we're moving inexorably in the direction of a total state, a completely reconfigured society. Back in 1994, the incremental game had taken us to the point where women were permitted to function in support positions, not forward deployed combat positions, but they could provide support. And since 2001, there have been, I believe, nearly 1,000 female casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan. Over 130 women have been killed. I think more than 800 have been seriously wounded. About 20,000 have served. But another element of the story that has to be addressed is that there is a horrible rampage against women in the military in terms of sexual assault within the ranks. So you're something like between six and ten times likelier as a female enlistee in the military to be sexually assaulted than you are if you're a civilian. And one of the qualifications that was expressed yesterday by the feminist element of the collectivist movement as they were celebrating the decision to integrate women into combat positions was the fact that there is such a problem, widespread problem, with sexual violence against women in the military. Why should we expect that? It's not as if the people who are in the military have taken oaths of celibacy. One of the really problematic, troubling things about a military establishment, once again, that's well understood by the founding fathers, is that when you are involved in killing as a profession, this has a way of emancipating people from moral discipline of all variety. People are given social permission to do things in the context of war that is a solvent to every other moral inhibition. There was a wonderful, genuinely conservative culture and social commentator by the name of Robert Nisbet, and about 30 years ago, he wrote a book called The Twilight of Authority, and he pointed out, and I do not mean to disparage people of goodwill and genuine patriotic inclination by sharing this insight, Mr. Nisbet, who was a patriot and a conservative, pointed out that there is a great deal in common psychologically between a soldier who excels on the battlefield and the kind of individual we label a psychopath in civil life. And through the license, the practice, rather, of what he calls licensed violence, the military has a way of transforming what would otherwise be criminal behavior into heroism. But there is a different kind of licensed immorality that comes with war and that has still wider appeal in as much as it exists on the home front as well as in the garrison and on the battlefield, continued Mr. Nisbet. I refer to the whole area of sexual conduct. It was under the steady impact of the Roman Republic's wars, first foreign and then civil as well as foreign, that the destruction of the Roman family system began. The great wave of immorality that hit Roman society in the first century before Christ, so well attested to by contemporary essayists, and that the Emperor Augustus strove violently to terminate through laws and decrees, had its origins in war. Now, the same thing has happened with the American Republic. Until 1917, until we were manipulated into war by Woodrow Wilson and Edward Mandel House, and, of course, the other people who were working for the banking combine of the Anglo-American elite, there's nothing conspiratorial about this. It's something which is well attested by their own writings and by so-called secular historians. Check out, for instance, Woodrow Wilson's War by Thomas Fleming, the very successful and very widely respected historian. We were manipulated into that war by covert interests who were seeking to bring about the thoroughgoing reform of American society, first of all, and to protect the interests of international bankers and reconfigure the world as well. But since 1917, with the exception, of course, of this brief period of normalcy between the wars, we've had the type of permanent military establishment that the Founding Fathers did not want to countenance here in newly freed, independent America, in our constitutional republic. And since 1917, the military really has been an engine of social revolution. During World War I, for the first time, you had the widespread government subsidy of contraception. You had the assumption here that once these men had gone overseas and were in the purlieus of France and visiting some of the other previously unknown and rather dissolute stretches of Europe, that they would indulge in the type of behavior for which soldiers have become notorious, and that something had to be done in order to limit the entanglements that that ensued as a result. You have people like General Pershing, who had female consorts that were married, and they were wildly and uninhibitedly and adulterous in their conduct. Same kind of thing had actually happened in the Philippines, the last great pre-progressive era war and the first colonial war. And war is an emancipating condition. It's an environment that's very morally permissive, and that has consequences once people come back from overseas. And you had this whole wave of American doughboys who came back from the fields and the trenches of Europe, and they had been changed, and the changes that they had undergone psychologically and morally began to have an impact on society. Flash forward about 15, 20, 30 years to World War II, you had men who were sound wind and limb being conscripted into the military. Those who were halt and lame and otherwise 4F were put into positions of rear echelon support or civil defense. And women whose husbands had left were recruited into the factories, which meant for the first time government got into the business of child care. And, of course, daycare was something the progressives had been promoting. H.G. Wells and the Fabian Circle in Great Britain, a group of people whom G.K. Chesterton knew intimately, had longed for this type of protracted social emergency so as to turn Children's into the permanent wards of the state, and their counterparts across the Atlantic in the Wilson administration, and then later on during the Hoover administration. It's actually in 1930 that you had the first White House National Congress, or National Conference, rather, on the family and on government-sponsored child care. They all absorbed the Fabian agenda for subverting the family in the interest of promoting government control. And so World War II gave them a wonderful opportunity. When the women were put to work in the war factories, you had the first federal daycare program was being put into place. And this is something that became institutionalized and further disrupted the bonds of the family. Of course, Social Security was something that had disrupted the intergenerational bonds. That's what FDR understood. He said that because of the changes that we're going to make in our society through Social Security, no mere politician and no Congress is going to be able to repeal it, because now you've created a different social framework that disrupts the implicit, actually scripturally, the explicit, the overt covenant responsibility of children to care for their parents and their dotage. That now becomes the so-called collective responsibility of the state. So you have the state absorb that element of the traditional family's function. In World War II, you have the state getting involved in caring for the young. So they were caring for the young, the children who were infants and toddlers, preschoolers. Then, of course, once they were safely ensconced in government schools, they were fully the wards of the state. And the idea is that in your dotage, in your elderly years, you'd be dependent upon government-provided Social Security, which, of course, is a snare and a delusion. But that was all catalyzed by war. In more recent compass, of course, back in the 1970s, when the so-called Equal Rights Amendment was proposed, people who properly opposed it warned that if the ERA were enacted, that the time would come when women would not only be permitted into the military, they would be conscripted into the military. And conscription, I contend, is not only a violation of the 13th Amendment, it's manifestly a violation, it's involuntary servitude. Not only is it staggeringly unconstitutional, as was understood by the Congress in 1813, when the White House had been torched and there was no money left in the Treasury, and America was losing a war with Great Britain. In December of 1813, James Monroe, the Secretary of State for James Madison, proposed a conscription measure, and it was beaten down by the Congress. Even in that extreme state of affairs, they were not going to countenance something that Daniel Webster, of all the unlikely people, properly identified as slavery and a complete violation of the constitutional compact. And the reason why they did this, by the way, the reason why the Madison administration was proposing conscription, it almost led to the secession of a number of states in the Northeast. At the Concord Convention in January of 1814, that was one of the points listed, the grievances that would justify a secession from the Union. One of the reasons why the Madison administration was doing this is because the militias would not invade Canada. They stopped at the border of New York, the New York state border with Canada, rather than invading Canada, because they were there to protect their homes. They were there to protect their states from the British. They weren't going to go on a foreign mission to conquer parts of Canada, as the War Hawks aspired to do. But conscription has always been understood by constitutionalists, including the founding generation, as something that was impermissible. It was constitutionally wrong. Thomas Jefferson said that conscription is the last of all oppression, something that no free person would count. So in the 1970s, there were warnings that the ERA would bring about conscription. Well, it didn't, because the ERA wasn't ratified. But now we're in a situation where, because women will be permitted into combat, they will be required now to register for selective service. People aren't talking about that yet, but that's coming. That's ineluctably the logic of the proposition. If you have equality of so-called rights to serve in the military, then you have equality of responsibilities, according to the collectivists, to make yourself available should the government decide to confiscate you. Once again, what is the logic of registration? If you register firearms, the assumption is at some point the firearms are probably going to be confiscated. Well, what's the logic of registering for selective service? The logic is that at some point the government would exercise its option to confiscate you. Once you're registered for selective service, you're part of the pool from which they will draw if the government decides that its needs require this type of blood sacrifice. And now that women will be permitted into combat, women, I contend, and this is something that the Christian Science Monitor was talking about yesterday, citing a couple of very reluctant but admirably honest legal authorities on the subject, if they're permitted into combat, then the logic is that they're going to have to be register for Selective Service. And the only reason you register is at some point they're probably going to draft at least somebody. And that brings about, in the name of equality, a uniformity of servitude. Equality under the law, of course, means that we have the equality of opportunities afforded by the law. That means that the government does not enjoy any exalted status above us. Dianne Feinstein's feudalist assumptions about disarmament notwithstanding, our society is based on the assumption that that which the government has is derivative of what the citizens permit them to have. The citizens create the government. The government's a creation of the people. The government as the creation cannot be greater than the creator. But equality on the collectivist construction assumes that the ultimate equality is uniformity of servitude. Women, of course, are being told that they have enhanced career opportunities now in the military. Well, the military in a republic doesn't exist to provide career opportunities. The military exists to protect the rights and property of the people. And that's been completely lost now because our new model military is involved in other things. And so they're deracinating people from their connections to home, hearth, and family and faith. They're placing the government at the center of everything that we do. They're imputing to the government some kind of divine power to reconfigure society in the interest of equality and prosperity through the magic that occurs as a result of collective coercion. And it doesn't surprise me to find out that one of the things that people have to do in order to have career advancement in this military is evince a willingness to fire on citizens who refuse to surrender their firearms to the government. That, of course, is completely of a piece with everything else that's going on. And so, as you say, Dr. Stan, this all reflects the thoroughgoing and systemic collapse of morality in our society. People don't understand the rudiments of morality. They've become so inured to materialism, and they've become so bewitched by the promise that through the collective exercise of force on behalf of the state, somehow we can remold society near to our heart's desire. And that, of course, is the primordial lie that was told in the Garden of Eden. You shall be as gods. Nothing shall be forbidden to you. Or the Tower of Babel. We can build this tower to the sky, and we can emancipate ourselves from the law. We can
hold that thought before we go up right now. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your PayPal button. Go right ahead.
Okay, my website is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or go to Google and type in Pro Libertate, ProLibertate, or my name, William N. Grigg, William Norman Grigg. That should be the first return. At the bottom of every essay, there is a PayPal button for those who have access to PayPal and want to contribute. That's the best way to do so, and we really appreciate all the help that we get.
And we appreciate if you're in a position to help with him. We think he does a wonderful job. He certainly writes our monthly newsletter, RadioLiberty.com. You can get it, and you can read his newsletters. Certainly, they're outstanding. Again, William Grigg. If you're in a position to help him, we'd certainly appreciate it. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you, and I really appreciate what you've done for me and for my family and the many generous things that have been done for us by many of your readers and listeners. It's a source of great comfort to us, and it's been our material salvation. Of course, our eternal salvation is a different proposition, but our immediate material needs have been made much less onerous by the generosity of you and many people who are in your wonderful audience. We'll be eternally grateful for all the help that we've received. And I want to reiterate and underscore the fact that we live in a Babylonian system. I mean, the great lie of the Babylonian system is that you can organize society in a way that not only ignores the existence of the Creator, but defies the order that was created by Him. And that, once again, somehow you can exalt above the rest of humanity a ruling clique that is invested with apparently divine and limitless powers to reconfigure human society. That was the founding lie of the Babylonian system. And believers historically have been told to eschew Babylon, all of its works and pomp, to separate ourselves from it, to emancipate ourselves from its assumptions, and to live according to a different standard. Of course, that standard is digested in the two great commandments, love our Creator, love the Lord our God, love our neighbor as ourselves. Of course, we're living in an era in which the love of many has grown cold. People are attached to the material things and are not at all scrupulous about the means that they employ in order to acquire them. Frederick Bastiat said that in the collectivist society, everybody tries to live at each other's expense. What we've been doing in our country. And it's not only a damnable lie, it's a pure and infinitely reliable recipe for the destruction of the civilization. We're living with the consequences of what we've chosen. Things are getting ugly, and they will grow uglier still in crescendo, I'm afraid.
I share your concern. I think that we just have to keep talking. I do think that more and more people are aware of the fact that something is seriously wrong. I think more and more people are looking for answers, and hopefully our listeners out across America are pointing people towards not only our programs, but the other programs of people in alternative radio. I hope they're pointing them towards your articles there on Lou Rockwell and on your website. William, I appreciate everything you do, and we look forward to getting that, certainly that January newsletter here in the near future.
You'll get it tomorrow.
Okay, God bless.
God bless you, Doctor.
Thank you so much. Good night. And that's been William Gregg, and we do hope you enjoy William's weekly commentary here on Radio Liberty. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we live in difficult times. And we talk now certainly about, certainly America now is supplying backup for the French invasion of Mali in Africa. Certainly we are funding and training and arming the people who are involved in the military revolt. They call it a revolt. It's not. It's these are professional soldiers, professional revolutionaries who are being brought into Syria. This is not something that originated in Syria. It originated in Washington, D.C. But, of course, this is war. These are examples of war. And I just wanted to share with you what General Sherman had said. General Sherman, who led the march through Georgia to the sea during the Civil War. This is what he said. You cannot qualify war in harsher terms than I will. War is cruelty, and you can't refine it. And those who brought a war into our country deserve all the curses and maledictions that people can pour out. War is hell. And ladies and gentlemen, there's only one thing worse than fighting a war, and that is losing a war. I believe God is going to turn against America. Now that we've turned against him, now that we've violated his laws as far as our military, we've taken Jesus Christ out of our military. A United States military chaplain is no longer allowed to pray in the name of Jesus Christ. America has become an anti-Christian nation. We're installing nations under Sharia law throughout the world. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders? Where is the outcry from our religious leaders about the torture that is being practiced by our people? Certainly during the early stages of the Iraqi war, at least three Iraqis, one of them a general, Iraqi general who'd committed no crime, they were tortured to death. How many people went to prison for it? Absolutely none. Oh, they sent one sergeant who was involved in carrying out orders at Abu Ghraib. He was simply a front, but none of the people in charge who ordered the torture were punished. Major General Tuguba, the highest-ranking Filipino in the American military, was ordered to investigate Abu Ghraib, but he was told that if he told the truth, that would be the end of his military career. He told the truth. We actually offer his report. You can get off the internet, or you can get Major General Tuguba's report from Radio Liberty. And after that, he was required to retire. Basically, my understanding, he was told to submit his resignation. Somebody said he couldn't resign. He had to retire. Well, I don't know, but under any circumstances. When a military officer did what was right and honorable, why, of course, he was required to give up his position in the military. And that says terrible things about the American military, because what it really means is that most of our military officers will compromise principle for advancements. And they've lost sight of this whole idea that the military is honorable and we're to follow God's laws. And protecting America, which was one time a Christian nation, is no longer a Christian nation. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk on the Agenda 21, the Covert Plan. And you need to get our new 4-CD set on the EMP attack. You need to get all of the material we have on the EMP attack because, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very, very concerned. We have a DVD on the threat of an EMP attack. We have the book, A Nation Forsaken. We offer the 2004 Congressional Commission report on this, and we offer the book, A Nation Forsaken, by a man who spent 30 years in the Department of Defense, and when he retired, he was a senior policy advisor to the Undersecretary of Defense. His name is Michael Maloof. We interviewed him earlier this week. You need to get this material. You need to help us get the information out. You're not going to get it through regular channels. Because, ladies and gentlemen, America has been taken over. Our media certainly has been taken over. There are many people in Washington, D.C., I know personally, who are very frightened about this. We are not doing anything. And could it possibly be that this is going to be the means of bringing America down? I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know one thing, and that God is going to bring judgment on this country. Because our military and certainly our religious leaders have not spoken out against torture. They've not spoken out against the lawlessness and the wars that we're going into. But all the millions of people that we've killed through needless wars, pray for America. Pray for revival. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is the place where we gather every day, Monday through Friday, from 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time, to figure out what are they thinking, to do it together collectively. What in the world is going on? Well, we've even got Ban Ki-moon now saying, hey, now, come on, guys, let's make nice with Mali. Oh, really? Who's behind all this stuff? You know, we've got good cop, bad cop, it seems like, in every situation. It's almost like it's created to make sure that you don't figure out what the right issue is at the right time. I don't know. Joining me in the studio is Josh today. Josh, don't you feel like it's sort of like it's everything's a game to try and figure out?
Absolutely. It's a challenge. It's a mental exercise.
It is. Like we were talking beforehand, it hurts your head to even think, well, if they're doing this and they're doing that, then is it, are they doing this because the other guy's doing that?